National Fishermen and Pacific Marine Expo are proud supporters of the Galley Stories podcast, as we make similar efforts to highlight the people and topics that define commercial fishing. You can see what that looks like in print and online all year long, as well as every November in Seattle when this community comes together at PME. Check out nationalfisherman.com and pacificmarineexpo.com to learn more.
Hey guys, this episode is brought to you by Alaska Brewing Company out of Juneau, Alaska. Go check out their new Wild Ness beer. Launched on March 1st, any place that you got a good retailer near you or your favorite wading hole. Here we go.
Hello and welcome to Galley Stories, stories of the Bering Sea and beyond, hosted by Mark Kaler. My name is Penka Jane, podcast deckhand and longtime listener. We'd thank you to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review. Here's today's catch.
Hello guys, welcome to another installment of Galley Stories, Stories of Bering Sea and Beyond. I am your host, Mark Kaler. Today we have with us Captain Vic Scheibert. How are you today, Vic?
Fine, thanks, Mark.
Thanks for taking the time.
You bet.
Vic, we'll just dive right into it. Where were you born and what was your first experience in the commercial fishing industry?
I was born in Seattle, Washington. I ended up growing up in Olympia most of the time, graduated from high school down there. And then I went to college up in Bellingham at Western. Ended up dropping out after a couple years up there and owed my dad some money for a Volkswagen Beetle. And I owed the government some money for a student loan. And a couple of other fellows that I ended up meeting up there that were from Olympia ended up kind of doing the same thing. And then they ended up finding a job in Alaska, working out in Dutch Harbor in the seafood industry. And so it was probably a month or so after they already had left that I applied for that company as well. That was Vita Seafoods back in 1974.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
I was 21 okay. When I first went to work up there.
Okay. How was that experience?
It was really an interesting experience. Things were pretty primitive back in Dutch Harbor back then. I started out on a Liberty processing ship called the Vita. Worked there for a couple of weeks, and then I requested to get transferred over to an old Army ship called the Viceroy. We basically processed king crab, and we extracted all the king crab out of the shell and into these meat blocks back in those days. So I worked there till the fall of 74, and then a fellow that I was working with butchering king crab thought we should go over and apply for a job on the Billiken. It was a pretty relatively new boat back then, and it was a catcher processor. It caught crab and also processed it on board. So one night after work, we walked over the Standard Oil Hill in Dutch Harbor in a snowstorm to go over there and apply for a job on the Billiken. And I was hired for the next season to go out to ADAC. Mm-hmm. After that.
So I want to just touch back on the blocks, crab meat going into blocks. You weren't at that time. We weren't just cooking them and selling them as portions and whole legs or whole crabs.
No, actually, king crab was relatively inexpensive back in those days. I think the meat itself sold for around $3 a pound, and the fishermen got something like 30 to 35 cents a pound for the crab on the hoof. But back then, everybody processed it into meat. They extracted it out of the shell, and it came in these, processed into these 15-pound long john liners, they were called, and then they were split up into 5-pound boxes and different pieces, and it was pretty much sold around the country in restaurants and for parties and stuff like that. But there really wasn't much crab sold in the shell back in those days.
That'd be a nice way to get it today, actually, if you got yourself
it was a wonderful pack. And then a lot of times there'd be these extra legs, these Maris legs, that weren't part of the meat pack, and they were frozen separately. We called them fancy legs back then, and we ended up freezing those individually, and they were kind of like frozen popsicles. You could just take them out of the freezer and serve them in parties, and yeah, pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah, a great big king crab, and the crab were bigger then too, right? Did you see bigger crab then?
Yeah, quite a bit. Yeah, there were several different seasons, and the Dutch Harbor season that used to take place back then had some really big crab when I first started working there.
When you first got on the Vita boat, what was your job?
I was a seafood processor, basically taking the sections and from the shoulder part of the crab and had these little water blowers, and we'd blow the meat out of the sections. And then later on I got moved up to butchering king crab, which was kind of the start of the process where you separate the crab or live and you separate the legs and shoulders from the back.
Mm-hmm. Now, then you went on to the Billiken, and she's still on the water today.
That's correct.
Yep. So tell us about that experience.
Got a job on the Billiken at the beginning of 1975. Chuck had just got done doing a king crab season in the Bering Sea and got off the boat. He was the captain back then, but he got off to sell the product. And so he had John Chong run the boat that season. And that was for the ADAC season. Went out to ADAC, and it was actually pretty poor fishing. And I was just a processor on I started as a processor working on the packing the meat up on there in those days.
How'd your progression go?
Did that for that season, and then I worked on the Billiken for the entire 1975-1976, and ended up working on deck, ended up having different jobs in production, ended up running the production for a while on there. So kind of pretty much a wide variety of experience on the boat and a lot of different areas.
Okay, can you explain some of those areas? A lot of our listeners are familiar with crab fishing on a 110-foot vessel or 130-foot vessel with
sure.
six guys on board, but this was a totally different kind of a entity.
Right. The fishing part of the boat was pretty much similar to what people have seen on TV. It was very similar to that. It was a little bit bigger boat back then. The Billiken's 135-foot boat. And we had a crew of 24 back in those days, and we were all pretty much jammed into this boat. But it also had a cooker in the bow of the boat where the crab would be cooked. And then we had an upper processing room and a lower processing room on there. And after the crab was cooked, the upper processing room was used for extracting the meat out of the shell. And that was done in a couple of different ways. One, like I mentioned earlier, you take the shoulders and use this high pressure water to blow the meat out. And then the legs were extracted. The meat was extracted out of the legs using these big rubber rollers, kind of like you see in an old wash machine wringer type thing. And so you'd stick the pointy end of the leg in there, and the shell would come out one side and the meat would squirt out the other. And then all that crab meat would go down to the bottom of the boat where we had the lower processing room, and it was packed up in a certain form back in those days, and it was kind of a standard form the industry put up. It was called the Wakefield pack, where they're the ones originally started packing king crab meat like that. It took a certain amount of red meat, certain amount of legs, certain amount of white meat, and then we put it into the freezer, and it would freeze in there for 6 to 8 hours, and then we'd end up breaking it out and packing it. And we had a couple of freezer holes, a couple of large freezer holes on the Billiken that we'd pack it in there. So we'd stay out quite a bit longer than a regular crab boat. We'd have enough supplies on the boat, packaging supplies, food, everything else, and we'd stay out for quite a bit longer than a regular crab fishing boat was, because a regular boat obviously has to deliver a live product back to town where we would process it right on board.
Fresh crab.
Yep.
Fresh crab. How often was it on the menu?
Not very often. You kind of got sicky. It's kind of like Lucy and the chocolate thing after a while.
Okay. So. What was it like with the cookers on the boat? I mean, you're actually cooking the crab, boiling water. Isn't there some inherent danger there?
Yeah, there was. They were called horseshoe cookers. It was a big cooker in the bow of the boat, and it would just kind of pull the crab through with these big stainless flights. But it worked pretty well. There was a couple incidents where guys had accidents and gotten burned, but actually it was a pretty functional unit.
So your progression into the wheelhouse, how did that come about?
So I left the company at the end of 1976 and tried going back to school for a while, and that didn't work out, and ended up pounding nails and framing for about a year and a half, and I got married, and then I got a job with a construction company in Seattle, and my old boss, Bill Howell, he found me working on a church steeple in Edmonds, and Chuck had built the Bountiful by then, and they needed somebody to come back to work on the Billiken, to run the production on the Billiken while he ran the production on the new boat, the Bountiful. So I went back to work on there, worked for a season or two, and then I ended up getting my mate's license at that time, and I was the mate on the Billiken for a few years after that, and then I ended up switching with a guy that was on the Bountiful. The captain of the Bountiful wanted me to come over and be the mate on there with him, and I came over there and had more sea time, and then eventually got my captain's license in the early 80s there.
But okay, when did you get the keys?
Pardon me?
When did you get the keys? What was it like to get the keys?
I think I took over as captain in 83, somewhere around there, 84. And we weren't fishing back in those days. We were just straight processing. Crab had kind of taken a turn for the worse there in the early 80s. and then in 1987, we took the boat back fishing again. And I fished it for 3 years from 87 to 89 and had some pretty successful seasons doing that.
Mm-hmm. And then you remained there until you went to the management side.
Yeah, in 1990, I got off the boat and started working in a Trident's office, and I managed different parts of the business for the company until 2014, when I became the president of Alaska Operations.
Mm-hmm. So, back to your time on the water, what would you say was your best experience?
Ah, boy, that's a tough one. My best experience, well, I had a pretty tremendous king crab season in 1987. I was pretty lucky, I would say, but I ended up catching close to 190,000 pounds of king crab at $4 a pound. So I made, I think it was like close to $90,000 in 12 days. So that was one of my
highlights
for the one of my best experience fishing. So.
What about the opposite side of that? What about your worst experience?
Mm-hmm. Worst experience, I'd say, was I was the mate on the Billiken in 1981, and we'd stayed up in Alaska very late, and we didn't end up coming back to Seattle until December. And back then, the weather forecasts weren't nearly as good as they are now. But we ended up in some huge seas in the Gulf of Alaska for almost a week, with the winds blowing like 100 plus for almost a week. It was a huge storm, 70-foot seas, and that was one of the few times I got back to town and nobody talked about it, but we were all thinking we weren't going back out again.
that was it, yeah. So what do you find that the sea has given to you?
It's just been a great experience overall, starting out with Chuck on the Billiken. You know, it was when I started with him, we only had one boat, the Billiken, and I think just the entire experience of working there 45 years and starting with a company that ended up becoming what it has, and being fortunate enough to get in on the ground floor with him and work my way up in the company, and it's just been an amazing experience. It's been extremely beneficial for me, my family, and just the experience of doing it.
You referring to Chuck, you're talking about Chuck Bundren, founder and owner of Trident Seafoods.
Yes.
So you had a lot of time. You were shoulder to shoulder with him a lot.
A lot.
And you know, there's a book out about his life. You're in it. Deck Load of Dreams.
Right.
It's called, right. And there's some wild stories in there. Just the way that things were done. So when you mentioned that you had gotten into Dutch Harbor pretty early on, and it was a way different place than it is today, what are some of the differences that you saw? You know, how has that changed?
Well, let me see. That's Yeah, Dutch Harbor was pretty rough when I first started going there. There was Unalaska was actually separated from Dutch Harbor, and there was no bridge back in those days, which there is now, where you can just drive across the other side. And there was only one bar there in those days called the Elbow Room, and it was a pretty tough place to go to. But we didn't get into town very often because it was a catcher processor, and a lot of times we got resupplied out in Port Moeller by a small freight boat. So when we got to town, it was pretty wild. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, the Elbow Room is still famous, and it's not even there.
Yeah, it's gone now, but.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly changed a lot. Now it's more like almost a city.
Oh, yeah.
It's got a Safeway.
Dutch Harbor only had, it had one cop when I first went to it in the 70s there. Now I think they have 24 or something like that.
I still enjoy today, even today, if you go to the Dutch Harbor News, they've got an entire section about their police blog, all the calls that they've gotten. Mm-hmm. Those are still unique.
Oh, yeah.
Even today. But, okay, so what is the sea taking away from you?
Yeah, I would say that the tough part about being gone and the sea and what it takes away from you, it's very tough on your family life. If you're married to someone who's independent enough to be able to handle that, it's difficult when you return, because then you find out you're not the captain at home. And it's a very difficult lifestyle, and a lot of guys have, you know, had families and kids and all that. It's just it's a tough way to raise a family and be gone that much as well. So I'd say that part of it was somewhat negative. But
would you change anything about your career?
Not a bit. No, it's just been really a fantastic ride. Mm-hmm.
And what would you suggest to young folks trying to or thinking about getting into the industry?
I think it's a great industry to get involved in. one of the things I notice about younger people nowadays, they don't seem to have the patience to stick with things for a while, and I think that's a really important thing. You know, loyalty is a big thing, and having the patience to work your way up and take the time to learn the business.
Mm-hmm. And knowing Trident as I do, that's how a lot of the management came, from the processing line.
Yeah, I would say a lot, just about everybody that started the company that was there for many years, which we had a lot of long-term employees there, they all were involved in processing in Alaska and kind of worked their way up just like I did.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you'd like to share with us, Vic?
No, I'd say probably the greatest experience I had in the whole thing was the people I worked with. I worked with some tremendous people in Alaska, and the relationships that you develop over the years and the bond that you have with those guys, I wasn't in the military, but I'd say it's probably somewhat similar to that sort of experience where you're spending, you know, 12 to 18 hours a day working with people day in and day out. You really get to know them, and there's just some great people I worked with up there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Vic, and if you don't have anything else, thanks for taking the time to sit down and give us your rundown.
Yeah, you bet, Mark. It was great talking with you.
All right, guys, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Galley Stories. We hope you like what the net brought in. Please leave us a review on iTunes, whether you like it or not. We're not fishing for compliments. Look us up on Facebook and Twitter, too, and reach out to us at galleystories@gmail.com.